Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Where is the North Texas economy headed, and how do we compare with the rest of the United States? After officially entering a recession in the second half of last year, the state's leading index of economic indicators saw its sharpest single-quarter decline since the index was created in 1981. So how much worse are things likely to get before they get better? And how will the turmoil affect the region's biggest industries, including wholesale trade, finance, IT, and real estate? My three guests today can offer some expert analysis. Kathy Cooper is a senior fellow at SMU's Tower Center. William Wallace is adjunct professor of economics at the University of North Texas. Minay Ujel is senior economist and vice president of the Federal Reserve of Dallas. All three of them will be participating in a panel discussion on Thursday at 11:30 at the Belo Mansion, sponsored by the Dallas Democratic Forum. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you.
Minay, we'll start with you. Of the major metropolitan areas in Texas, Austin and Dallas saw the biggest slides so far. Fort Worth is not doing a lot better. What makes us particularly vulnerable right now?
Well, Dallas has a biggest concentration of industries there that are cyclical, that are unstable cyclically, or that are not, well, that are more... Okay, so Dallas has, say, financial activities and finance and insurance and professional and business services. These are the industries that are a little bit more cyclical, move together with the nation, and we have a higher share of these industries. So that's why Dallas has been hit. Austin, the same way. So now Houston has a higher share of energy, for example, and they've sort of been doing well until, say, the third quarter or fourth quarter, but with oil prices and natural gas prices going down, we'll see what happens to Houston. I don't think they'll be able to keep up their growth. So that's basic reason.
Mm-hmm. And of course, oil prices are better for some people who are consumers, but obviously the state's refining capacity is also affected, not just our production. What happens to refining money being invested and spent when oil prices are down and therefore we take certain production offline?
Well, on net, when energy prices go up, Texas benefits. Now, of course, the distribution is a little bit different. The producers are better off. The refiners who buy the inputs, such as natural gas and oil, are a little bit worse off. So their refining margins go down. And just sort of looking at one more thing, the consumer is, of course, worse off as well because we pay higher utility prices, higher gasoline prices. In terms of refiners, our refiners use natural gas as an input. Well, our petrochemical industry uses natural gas as an input. So when gas prices are low compared to oil, our petrochemical producers do well relative to the rest of the country, rest of the U.S. I mean, rest of the global petrochemical industry. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of refiners, though, their margins are getting squeezed because the demand for their output is falling. Diesel, heating oil, gasoline. So they're getting squeezed from the top, but their inputs are lower. Now, the other issue to look at is as the credit conditions get tighter and tighter, we're seeing some of these refining any expansion that was on the table is being put off. So we're seeing much less coming online, probably in terms of expansions. We're not going to see that in 2009. Mm-hmm. Kathy, you might have some ideas on that too.
Well, exactly. I agree with what you're saying in terms of what expansions were planned. They have been put off because prices have come down as much as they have, both for natural gas and for any kind of crude production and refining. So that certainly affects the state as a whole.
Our greatest foreign trade partner here in Texas is Mexico. And I'm wondering, maybe William, you can talk a little bit about what happens when we're no longer exporting as much. And of course, the dollar's a little bit stronger now against the peso.
Well, that certainly would be a disadvantage as far as our trade with Mexico is concerned, because we have depended heavily on trade with both Mexico and Canada, of course. But, you know, as I look at the present crisis, I view it more from a national perspective, as Mine has presented it from the perspective of Texas. I think we're into this pretty deeply. we're not yet at the trough. And I do think, as most observers have said, it's going to get worse before it gets better, at least from the national perspective. However, I am beginning to have some small grain of hope from some reports and some comments that have come out within the last few days and weeks that the banking system seems to have stabilized somewhat compared to the way it was last fall. And this reflects some benefit that has been derived from the TARP program as capital has been added to banks, and there's been an effort to take some of the defunct assets off the books of those banks, that they are gaining a little strength. The rate of decline in the economy, just this morning, the Wall Street Journal noted that the rate of decline seems to have slowed. Now, if we could take any hope from that, that's a good thing. At least maybe we are nearing the trough, and hopefully the turnaround and the recovery phase of the cycle will be not too far ahead. But it's premature to make any predictions about that. One grasps at straws.
Well, let's talk about the trough. The S&P 500 was at an all-time high in the fall of 07. It was like 1565. As of this morning when I checked, it's below 800. What's the lowest, Kathy, that it can realistically go?
Well, it could go a fair amount lower if people don't begin to see and don't begin to experience some optimism about the future. And in Washington, they keep telling everybody every day how tough it is out there, and they keep saying things like catastrophe and such. So I think one thing is we've gotten an awful lot done. Washington has gotten an awful lot done to get this economy turned. Both the Federal Reserve has done massive amounts, I believe, and done so much of what needs to be done to get this economy turned. And as well, this stimulus package, though there will be controversy over how much is too much, I think the fact that has passed will start to hear better news coming from Washington. And I think then consumers can begin to feel better, and that's what's required before we get this economy turned. And I'm with Bill over there in terms of expecting that it won't be terribly longer before we start to see a better future and certainly more optimism.
Richard Fisher over at the Fed called the markets historically and hysterically volatile, which is one of the – if there is great reading to be had right now, that's a good point.
Well, and I would say the level of the S&P 500 that you referred to, it was at about that level in 2002, and it had been at that previous high in 2000. So we've had this kind of a decline even within this decade following the 9/11 problem. So – I didn't expect to see it again within the same decade, but we're living through it, and we know it can get back up because, as you mentioned, in October of 2007, the S&P reached a very close to an all-time high. So it's a volatile market, equities are.
I might add just one thought to that, and that is that if you look at the market capitalization in stocks at the moment, we've lost about 50% of the value of stocks during this current crisis. But to sort of put it in perspective, in 1932, we lost 90%. So, yeah, bad things are happening, but they have been worse. And people occasionally ask me, you know, are we going to have a repeat of the 1930s? Well, I don't think so. But it could happen. And just to put it in perspective of where we are now relative to those even worse conditions, we're not that bad off yet.
Even given that more Americans are invested in the stock markets than ever were by percentage in the 1930s?
Well, that is true. And, of course, this has impacted a lot of people who are depending upon IRAs and 401ks and other kinds of investment instruments for their retirement and so on. And I get questions every day from people, what should I do? You know, my funds that I've been counting on for retirement is now worth 40% of what it was a few months ago. And that's a difficult question to answer. But I keep telling people, don't sell anything under these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you can say for the stock market in the United States is that when it has dipped, in recent years at least, it's come back pretty strongly. You remember the dot-com crisis in the at the beginning of this decade, and going back into the 1980s, the stock market crash in October of 87. The recovery from those incidents was pretty impressive. Stock market came back pretty strongly, and there's no reason to expect that that won't happen again. It just may take longer.
I mean, I've actually read that the things are less serious today for the IT industry, at least in this part of the country, than they were after the big bubble in the early 2000s.
That is correct. The IT industry is losing jobs at the moment, both in manufacturing and in services, but it's nowhere near what we had in 2001. That was a high-tech bust for us. And at that time, we had a higher share of IT industries here in Texas, and especially Dallas, too, in terms of telecom services and telecom manufacturing. So we went through a huge bust. And our recession actually lasted a lot longer than the nation's, about until mid-2003 because of the high-tech bust. Right now, we're not in that situation, not only for high-tech, but for any other industry. We're not near the levels that we went to in 2001 through 2003. For example, the unemployment rate in Texas is right now about 6%. That's the lowest the highest we've had since, I think, September of 2004. So during the recession in 2001 to 2003, it got a lot higher. And just remember that in Texas, we actually added jobs last year. Now, as the numbers get more and more revised, those numbers keep coming down. So the latest number that I have now is we added about 42,000 jobs last year. But that's still positive compared to what the nation has gone through. So we're doing better.
And I might just add, I'm not a Texas expert, but I do know there are an awful lot of energy companies in Texas, headquartered in Texas and doing business here. We were talking about that a moment ago, Monet was. And I think it's important to keep in mind we are not, as a state, as dependent on energy as we were historically, but we still get an awful lot of help from energy. And these commodity prices being as low as they are, we keep saying how much they've fallen, but in fact they're still far above the commodity price levels, oil and natural gas, of the 1990s. And so there's a lot of help that's being provided to the Texas economy and because of the current level of commodity prices, energy prices in particular.
Did, for example, or specifically the IT bust help protect the real estate industry from the bubble that we've seen in other parts of the country?
Well, you could say that, I suppose, because of the IT bust, our housing sector was quite weak in those days. So coming out of that, we did not boom. And so we didn't bust either. So if you look at Texas overall, there's an index called the OFEO index, which looks at repeat house sales. Nation has been going down. The coast, California, Florida, down 20% year over year. We're still positive. So we had positive price appreciation in Texas through the third quarter. That's as far as we know right now. It's 3.2%. So we weren't immune. Our housing sector is very weak, and we haven't had starts, contracts, everything is going down, permits, but not as bad as the rest of the nation. So we have positive price appreciation still.
We are talking about the North Texas economy and the economy of the United States. You are welcome to join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. We'll return in just a moment. Remember, you can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can cultivate your curiosity at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris. Chris Boyd. My three guests this hour are Kathy Cooper, who's a senior fellow at SMU's Tower Center, Mene Ujel, senior economist and vice president of the Federal Reserve of Dallas, and William Wallace, adjunct professor of economics at the University of North Texas. All three of them will participate in a panel discussion given by the Dallas Democratic Forum on the North Texas economy. That takes place on Thursday at 11:30. If you want to find information about that and reserve a seat for yourself, you can go to the Think page of KERA.org. If you want to be part of today's conversation, we welcome you to send email to think@KERA.org or to call 1-800-933-5372. William, what is the difference from an economist's perspective between a really severe recession and the big scary D word, the depression?
Well, you know, we don't use the depression word much anymore, and it never has really been defined as we have attempted to define the meaning of recession. Economists have a definition of recession, which means two or more quarters of negative real growth is automatically defined as a recession. But depression word, if I may use it, the only time we've ever really referred to a downturn as a depression was in the 1930s. People are asking, of course, if this one is bad enough to be called a depression. But as I mentioned a minute ago, we're still not down in the dumps, if you look at the statistics, to the same degree that we were in the 1930s. And in fact, not even to the extent that we were in the early 1980s when we had a fairly serious recession. At that point, for example, unemployment was at 10.8%. Now we're at 7.6. Now, I'm not saying that it might not get to 10.8 again, but so far we're not in what I would call a depression.
Yes, I just wanted to echo a little bit about what Bill said. I was thinking some of those same numbers but before he got to them. But what bothers me is when people do try to compare this to the Great Depression, because unemployment was 25% then, not 7.6%, and probably going higher. But still, 25% versus, let's use a round number of 8, that's a very big difference, on top of which there were not the sorts of supports to average Americans or any Americans back then. There were no food stamps. There were no unemployment benefits. There simply weren't the kinds of protections for people that there are today.
And no deposit insurance either.
And no deposit insurance. So people lost so much. So there is such a vast difference today from what was experienced in the 1930s. I think it's really a serious mistake for people to continue to make that comparison.
Well, it's also easy to forget, Kathy, that there are still individuals and still businesses that have money, but they're nervous about spending it. What are they doing with the cash that they might have been putting into the markets before?
Oh, I think many of them are sitting
under the mattress.
Either under the mattress or they have that $250,000 in deposit insurance, so they can spread it around in banks or keep it in other places in securities accounts. But they are keeping it as liquid as possible, no question. They have money market accounts and treasury bills, I think a lot in treasuries, and because that's one of the reasons why treasury rates have gone as low as they have. People are clearly very nervous, and they're continuing to be told that they should be, and so they remain so. At some point, all of that money is going to start to pull out and start to go back into all sorts of parts of our economy, including the stock market. And the stock market is one of the best leading indicators of of our economy. So I'm waiting to see some clear direction there before I ever get upbeat about the turn in the economy.
We've talked a little bit about residential real estate. We haven't talked so much about commercial so far. What's taking place in Texas, Mene, when it comes to commercial construction and then commercial real estate as a whole?
Well, the weakness in housing has bled into commercial real estate. So we're seeing investment in commercial real estate down. In fact, just looking at year-to-date through November, commercial investments, all cities, and I can just sort of rattle off some numbers, and this is looking at apartments, industrial, retail, and office. In Austin, they were down about 60%. Houston 45 because the energy prices were helping out throughout the year. But Dallas was about 52, something like that. So investment in commercial real estate is down. One thing that is a little bit of concern here for Texas is that if you look at our banks and the health of banks, we have a lot of commercial real estate on our books. So the share of commercial real estate in our banks is twice the national average. If you look at it, we have it by a Federal Reserve District. So the U.S. average is about 14%. We have about 29-30%. So our bank's exposure to commercial real estate is quite high. So if commercial real estate takes a real downturn, that would imply something for the banks, some more concern for the banks.
So how do you create incentives for commercial real estate to pick back up again? Are there things that are there kinds of policy that can be put in place at the federal level?
Well, I there certainly are some, but at this stage, I think people have a lot more on their plate that they're worrying about getting through. But ultimately, I guess it's waiting until to see what's happening to vacancy rates and all these various categories of commercial building that Monet mentioned.
Well,
might add a thought on that. One of the specifics in the recently passed fiscal stimulus plan is a tax incentive for businesses to be able to depreciate on a faster basis investments that are made for plant and equipment. And I would think to some degree that would encompass commercial real estate too. If firms are undecided as to whether to make investments right now and that involves the purchase or building of buildings, then there's at least that one incentive that's part of the stimulus package. I hope it works.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the difficulty is that, and I'm remembering because I was in a policy position in Washington in 2001 and 2, the last recession, and what businesses were saying then is we appreciate the potential of these incentives, but if our vacancy rates are high and we're cutting back on employment, we don't need as much space, then we will see these vacancy rates go up in the commercial buildings, office, and elsewhere. And that provides much less incentive for builders to build more. They just want to make more efficient use of what they have already built and sold and perhaps leased out. So I think it will help. I think that incentive will help. That carrot that William mentioned will help, but it may take a little while before it starts to help.
How well do you think that members of Congress understand the economy, Kathy, having been in a policy position in Washington in the last recession?
That's a very difficult question, and that's a very tough question. Some obviously understand very, very well. Others not as well. Some members have certain projects that they've been working on, wanting to get accomplished for many, many years. And so no matter what bill is in the works that looks like it might happen, that piece of policy is in there. So I think that's what we've seen in part with this new bill. So, but there's some understanding. There's a common sense understanding of what affects their district, and 'cause they hear from their constituents on a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute basis. But I'm not sure they all have it completely in perspective.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me add one comment
Sure.
to that, if I may, and this is kind of a personal judgment. I believe they're better informed than they used to be. I remember from my own experience when I was with the Federal Reserve Board in Washington having to, on occasion, testify before certain committees on various issues. And it was disgusting to see the level of preparation, the level of understanding that some of the members of Congress, committee chair people, and so on had of the issues. Now when I see, like last week's meeting of the Senate Banking Committee, Chris Dodd's committee, and I listened to Paul Volcker's testimony before that committee, I thought how much better informed the members of that committee are now about what's going on than they used to be. I don't know, Kathleen, if you would agree with that or not. But
no, I think that is true.
Yeah.
They also have an awful lot more pressure, I believe, now than they would have 20 or 30 years ago because there are so many more ways for their constituents to contact them and tell them what they need. It is a very tough job that Congress people have, whether in the Senate or in the House.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. I'm curious as to whether there are things that individuals, whether they are involved in a business or just sort of planning their own personal finances, ought to be doing to contribute to, if not a recovery, a stabilization that we're not doing right now because so many people have sort of jumped inside the turtle shell. Nobody wants to answer this one.
Well, right now, of course, the emphasis is on spending, to do anything we can to get people to spend. And this is perhaps the one disappointment that I have with the stimulus package that was passed last week, is that it didn't emphasize enough the immediate, urgent need to get money spent, because that's what's going to jumpstart the economy. Need to put the purchasing power in the hands of those people who will spend it, which means the lower to middle income groups in the economy. And I think right now that's the whole emphasis, get people to spend.
And I would say that the stimulus package did certainly emphasize getting money into the hands of people at the lower end. That's the direction that it took. But in the end, I think there has to be some time to give people a chance to get their house in order, if you will, their finances in order. We've gone through a 20-year period, actually longer than that, of having savings in this economy decline. You know, every dollar of income was not, a lower percentage was saved. And we got down to zero last year, and we're moving that back up. So some of this increased saving is a good thing and necessary. And I would imagine before this year, certainly next year is over, we'll have a saving rate that's not zero and certainly not 3% where it is today, but something closer to 7, even lower than it was 20, 30 years ago. So I think some of this is necessary, and then people will feel confident enough to begin that longer-term spending that Bill was talking about.
We have a lot fewer government sorts of jobs in this part of the state than in other areas. Does that hurt us because those are ultimately probably the most stable kinds of jobs?
Yes. It doesn't hurt us, but they are the most stable jobs. And in fact, if you look at the government sector, that was the sector that added the most jobs last year here in Texas. So that is correct. For example, when we talk about San Antonio and we say it's sort of an old economy, but it has a lot of health jobs. It has a lot of government, has a lot of army, the military is there. So those are all jobs that are not as cyclical as the rest of the economy, and they do help in times when the economy is very volatile.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Sharon in Coppell. Hi, Sharon.
Oh, hi. Yes, my question is, a few years ago, Senator Phil Graham passed a bill that deregulated how banks made loans, I think regarding mortgages, and I'm not sure what else. But and sorry, I don't recall the name of the bill. But I wondered what your guests thought at that time about that deregulation.
Bill, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I believe that the caller is referring to the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which was passed by Congress in 1999. And what that act did was it went back and amended the old Glass-Steagall Act of the early 1930s and broke down some of the barriers that banks had been subject to. You may recall during the early years of the Depression, the Congress really put through some rather draconian laws on what banks could and could not do, and they separated commercial banking from investment banking, from brokerage and insurance and other kinds of financial activities, and banks argued and lobbied for years to deregulate and get rid of some of those rules. And when the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act was passed in 99, I was one of those who thought it was probably time that this was done. However, I have to admit that I'm having some second thoughts about that now as we're deeper and deeper into this financial crisis, because the banking industry has on many occasions, as we've seen with the subprime lending move in mortgages and making of loans to borrowers who were not creditworthy without doing the analysis and the due diligence that they should have done to qualify those borrowers, were in deep trouble as a result. Conflicts of interest have come up when investment banks and commercial banks got back together under the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. So the caller has put her finger on, I think, a sensitive issue. There are a lot of people who are saying maybe Glass-Steagall wasn't so bad after all.
Kathy?
Well, you want differences of opinion, and so you have one here. I spent 20 years of my life in the commercial banking business, and so I remember, I haven't been there for a while, but I certainly do remember when this bill was passed. And I frankly don't think that's the cause for what we've experienced in the last year. I can understand some of the things Bill has mentioned, but it was mainly getting insurance and banking together and breaking down the barriers between investment and commercial banking. But I think some of these same things would have happened even if we had not allowed them to work more closely together, to allow commercial banks to take on some of the functions of investment banks. One of the biggest problems that we've seen and what caused this crisis has had to do with mortgage brokers and just the overall structure and incentive system within the mortgage business that has pushed people into making loans to people that they never should have been made to. And so that's an issue that we all have to be concerned about, and the fix has to include some dealing with that issue very importantly.
I certainly agree.
We will return to our discussion of the economy in just a moment. You're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can cultivate your curiosity at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Manay Ujjal, who is Senior Economist and Vice President at the Federal Reserve of Dallas, William Wallace, who's Adjunct Professor of Economics at the University of North Texas, and Kathy Cooper, a Senior Fellow at SMU's Tower Center. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can see all three of my guests at a panel discussion taking place Thursday, sponsored by the Dallas Democratic Forum. To find more information about that, go to the Think page of KERA.org. Another thing that people, and I'm sorry to keep bringing up the Depression here, but it is everybody loves to compare it and everybody studied it in school. People talk about the problems with protectionism. And now suddenly this is something that we're talking about again. What do we need to keep in mind, Kathy, as we're watching our lawmakers craft policy to address the problems we're having right now?
Well, we do need to, since you brought up protectionism, we do need to be very careful that as Americans we follow the policies that we have followed ever since the Great Depression in terms of freer trade.
Having learned a lesson.
Economists, I think, would say that was a contributor to the Great Depression, but perhaps the more important factor was the fact that so many banks closed and such. But protectionism is something that we do not want to be accused of pursuing. And so there was a lot of nervousness at the beginning with the stimulus bill, because there were a couple of provisions that were protectionist in nature. And there's a little vagueness now about exactly where we are on that. But I think the more that Congress pursues a freer trade policy. The Congress and President Obama pursue a freer trade policy, the better off we will be 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak to Thomas in Dallas. Hello, Thomas.
Yeah, I was wondering how much control an individual Fed governor has over his region, since, you know, the national. Is he able to restrict certain credit packages, whatever, instruments? Is that just a product of necessity? You see a starter home for $400,000, $500,000, it's hard to conceive ever a market for those. But if the prices, get there, you're going to have people doing whatever they can to pay for that, I guess.
I'll be glad to take a crack at that. An individual Fed governor, now you're referring to the members of the Federal Reserve Board in Washington, really do not have that much power over issues of the kind that you're talking about. The board, historically and even still today, operates as a board, while the chairman, now Ben Bernanke, is sort of the chief spokesman for the board. Nevertheless, what he's talking about is a point of view that is shared by at least a majority of the board. So individual governors really do not have any way to influence decisions in the economy beyond what the board itself would do.
And let me just add that the regional presidents who go and represent the region at the FOMC table, they also take information from our region and present it up there so that the board and all the other presidents know what's going on in our economy. But again, as Bill says, they work together with the board, and the regional presidents, only five of them, can vote on issues or on interest rates anyway. But basically, it's more of a taking information from this region up to Washington type of information.
As opposed to crafting certain conditions within that region.
That is correct.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Our email address is think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Steve, who asks, what do you think of the opinions of people like Nouriel Roubini and Nassim Taleb, who appeared last week on CNBC to say that we're facing fundamental changes in our civilization, that things will not be the same as they have been the last 50 to 60 years? It's a big question. Well, let me divine that down, and I hope that Steve will give me the latitude. Maybe the question is, to what extent can we really compare what's going on now with what has happened in the past?
I'm familiar with Nouriel Roubini. I'm not familiar with the other person that was mentioned. Nouriel Roubini has been fairly pessimistic for some time, but it certainly appears as though much of what he worried about is happening now. Of course, he continues to be even more pessimistic than most people, most economists out there. And none of us can, with complete confidence, say that he's wrong about that. That I'm applying to just the overall economy and how it's performing. I do think we will see some changes. We'll see some changes in our regulatory structure. We're likely to see some changes in international financial institutions so that they take on new and different roles. And that should have happened a good while back, and it's slow in happening. But it does seem to take crises of this nature to make us take on these very difficult changes that are required. So I think there will be changes, and there will be significant changes. But I wouldn't use quite the stark language that he appears to have used in that program last week.
Mm-hmm. May I just add one thought to that? I think the point that is being made here is a good one. I think that there is, to some degree, a trend toward civilizational changes, and it brings to mind a book published a few years ago by Samuel Huntington called The Clash of Civilizations, in which he pretty much laid out the fact that the world is changing in terms of competitive relationships and so on, that nation states are perhaps not as important as they once were, and that this will evolve over time. Over how much time is an unknown question, into a different kind of a structure of the global economy. I think that book had a more profound impact on the way I look at the world economy than anything else I've ever read.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to McKinney, and we'll speak to Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. My question relates to the bill that I guess President Obama is going to sign today, being referred to as a stimulus bill, and it's a two-part question. Number one, will the government have to sell bonds to finance the increased spending in this bill? And if so, why would it be thought of as a stimulus when we're taking money from the more efficient private sector and spending it with the less efficient public sector?
Well, we may have a couple of different answers to this question, but I'll get started and say, just to simply answer his question, yes, the government, the federal government, will have to sell bonds to finance it. But I think in the short run, that can still be stimulus, just because interest rates are so low and there is the need to get some spending going. Bill mentioned a while back, William mentioned that individuals, consumers who used to be, who make up something like anywhere from 65% to 70% of the spending usually in our economy, they're just not spending as much as they were. And so the federal government is stepping into the gap here and spending and using this money to help to do that. Now, what you have mentioned, though, Patrick, is exactly the argument that is going on in Washington between Republicans and Democrats. One is saying that they're concerned that it's not as much stimulus as it's purported to be because it's taking money from private sector. So it's a debate that is going to be with us, I think, for the next 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And one fact, if I might add, that is pertinent here is the fact that we still get a substantial portion of our revenue from the sale of Treasury bonds from foreign sources. This is on everyone's mind because we don't want to see that go away. And I was pleased to see that the Wall Street Journal had an article just this morning on how the demand for foreign demand for Treasury securities is still very high. And this means that we're getting a lot of what we're going to spend in this stimulus package from foreign sources. So it's a complicated question to answer, but it's sort of a redistribution, if you want to think of it that way. Those who are going to be buying these securities are probably of a higher income group than those to whom the money is going to go under the spending stimulus package.
Well, when you talk about foreign interest in U.S. Treasury bonds, I'm curious, we should also talk about how our recovery will match up in terms of the timeline with other countries, which are sliding into this at different rates than we are in many cases. What can we expect to see?
I actually think that the U.S. is going to come out of its recession sooner than Europe, for sure, and perhaps even than Japan. Japan has been in a recession almost for such a long time, and they reported figures last week of maybe it was earlier this week of 12. They had a 12% decline in their fourth quarter. Very, very troubling numbers for a country that has been in having such difficulty. But the rest of Asia is suffering. China's suffering. Latin America's suffering. There's really no part of the world that is escaping this, and that makes it very difficult. But I do think that the U.S. has taken such an aggressive approach, both through its Federal Reserve and through the Treasury and the administration's role, that we will bounce out of this sooner. Now, is it going to be the typical bounce that we are accustomed to after a, quote, normal recession? Perhaps not. There are some forecasters who are very upbeat for the second half of this year and next year. But I think we're likely to have a tougher time coming out of it. But I do think we will lead the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. One interesting fact that pertains to this is that the European Central Bank is still holding interest rates very high. Exactly the thing that the Federal Reserve was criticized for back in the Depression era, of having pursued high interest rates in the face of an oncoming serious recession or depression. Why the European Central Bank is doing this, I can't fully explain, but it strikes me as inconsistent with the state of the economy. The European countries right now, most of them are in the ditch, and their central bank is not doing a lot to help them out of it.
I might just add one final point, and that is I remember a year or two ago hearing an awful lot of discussion around the country from people, or mainly from people in other countries, saying that they were decoupled from the U.S. economy. There was an awful lot of focus on that. You may well remember that, Chris. But I remember thinking at the time, why do they believe that? The U.S. has been the leader, really the driving force of the world economy, growing faster than most of the other, than the other big economies in the world for the last 20 years. And if we slow down, we're going to affect the rest of the world. There's no way they can be completely decoupled. And in fact, we've learned that they were not decoupled. We shouldn't be happy that they are suffering, and certainly we're not. But we need to all go into these situations with more realistic assumptions.
And as we recover, that will help their recoveries.
Yes, it will.
I was just going to add from a regional point of view, we did follow the national economy later into recession and we'll come out after them. We will follow them out of recession. But I think as the national economy gets better, that is going to affect the demand for energy and that will affect energy prices. And as those prices come up, that will help us also in Texas. So that should be a boost for us.
So if we come out later, could we also come out stronger ultimately? When the rest of the country has recovered to a more significant extent?
We will get a boost from the recovering national economy for sure. So, yes.
So, besides energy, Minae, what are the most important indicators for you as you're sort of tracking our prospects? What are you paying the most attention to right now?
Well, you know, the three things that were helping Texas before we went into this were energy was one, our exports was the other, very strong exports growing much faster than the nation, and our housing sector was a lot better than the nation. So what we look at is those are now much weaker. But I think as the national economy gets on a good footing, which will help the global economy, our exports are going to start to move up. So that will help energy. And then our housing market, as I said earlier, is not as bad a shape as the national. So that will keep us strong as well, I think.
In the few seconds we have left, can anyone think of a silver lining that we might look forward to a couple of years down the line? Is there anything good that comes out of a period like this where so many people and so many businesses are suffering in ways that we all find regrettable?
I would like to make one comment on that. You know, one would hope that we would learn from our experiences. I'm not convinced that we ever do. And here's another opportunity to learn from what we've gone through. I personally believe that we need very serious regulatory reform. And others are saying the same thing. And I think if we don't get control of our financial system through improved regulations, we're asking for trouble again.
William Wallace is adjunct professor of economics at the University of North Texas. Minae Ujell is senior economist and vice president of the Federal Reserve of Dallas. Kathy Cooper is a senior fellow at SMU's Tower Center. All of them will participate in a luncheon forum on Thursday. You can find information about that on the Think page of KERA.org. It's been great having all of you with me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.